From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson, our technical director, Jason Croft. On the program today, Computers and You, a show we do once a month on the first Thursday of the month. Debbie Fleiger and Jim Irick of the University of Illinois are with us this morning. Whether you're looking for a new computer, have questions about online security, or need some troubleshooting advice, they're happy to help. And I suspect this morning we'll spend some time talking about Apple's Mountain Lion and Microsoft's Windows 8. But listeners, Jim and Debbie are here for you, so join us with your questions by phone or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will.com/talk@illinois.edu. Debbie Fleiger is a network engineer for Campus Information Technologies and Education Services, or SITES, here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And Jim Irick is a wireless network designer and security engineer for the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the U of I. Again, the phone numbers 333-9455, 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Welcome back. Good to see you.
It's nice to see you, too.
To see you.
And we have a listener ready to talk with us. Line 1, Champaign, good morning.
Good morning. I have a particular problem here in that when I go to a website like the Wall Street Journal News website and click on a video, it just comes up a blank screen and doesn't play anything. But if I go to another website, Google News, videos play perfectly well. And this happens both with Firefox and with IE. Do you have any idea what could be causing the problem? Actually, I should say not blank screen, but it'll come up with the frame, and then nothing will happen.
A couple of thoughts. One of them is that perhaps you don't have the right plugins, so different websites will use different plugins to display video. So there may be a difference where you don't have an up-to-date version of Java, or maybe they're using Flash. So I would check with that. The other idea I had was perhaps you have some sort of ad blocker program running.
I have ABP running, but when I the blockable items for that page, nothing happens.
Can you just try disabling Adblock Plus when you're on the Wall Street Journal page in that tab to say, and just turn it off and then refresh and see if it works? Okay, so then I would go to the first one, which is a plugin issue. So I would go to the Adobe webpage and do their Flash test to see that you have the most up-to-date version installed and everything's fine with that and it works. And the same thing with Java would be the two I would test.
I'm on automatic updates for all of those things.
Yeah, but I would still actually go to their webpages and do their tests. Let me see if I can figure out what the... off the top of my head, I don't know the URL. You probably just go to your favorite search engine and type Flash
That's
test.
What I'm doing right now, Adobe Flash test or something like that?
Yes. Test your Flash player installation. So adobe.com/software/flash/about. And I got to that by just doing Flash test, which took me to Adobe's Shockwave test, and then a link off the Shockwave test. Took me to the Flash test. And my Flash is working, but interestingly enough, it says you have not installed Shockwave on this laptop yet.
So I went to the Wall Street Journal. I just Googled Wall Street Journal video, and as it brought up the video, there was a little sign for a little bit loading plugin. So it clearly is using some kind of plugin. It came right up for me.
It's strange because I never got anything like that. Let's see. Well, this is going to take me a little while to figure my way through it, so I'll let you get on to your discussion about it.
Okay. If you need to, call back later.
All right. Thank you very
much. All right. Thanks for the call. Next, we go to a listener in Philo on line two. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a Mac computer, a desktop, a fairly new one, and I've had a Norton protection system that I paid for a year, and then when it came time to renew it, I tried to renew it, and for some reason it never downloaded. I tried to contact Norton. It was the worst company I've ever experienced dealing with in my life. I never got to real people for almost forever, and when I finally did, they weren't helpful. Do you have any suggestion? I've already paid for this thing, but it's not useful.
Well, it's been a number of years since I used Norton on a Macintosh. I haven't really had a need for it in the last few years. I'm doing a quick look on their page. So you have the Norton Internet Security or the antivirus?
Both.
Okay. I guess I'd say, you know, if it never downloaded, hopefully you've got a code and you can go back and try and download it again and reuse your license key. If you didn't ever get the key, then the serial number or the key to turn on the software, then you're really going to have to deal with their tech support it's their ordering support, not so much their tech support, to get that license code to make it work. Because if you go to their webpage, you can click on download.
I'm so unhappy with them. I'm happy just to forget them. If you say maybe I don't need it at all with my Mac.
Antivirus on a Mac is one of those borderline things that, depending on how you use your computer, it may or may not be a good idea, but there's some pretty good free stuff out there. Oh, I'm drawing a total blank on the name of the...
And Jim's now in the hot seat, and...
Yeah.
He's looking at Debbie like, thanks.
Well, I think we'll just try to search for something. There is a version of Clam AV that looks like it runs on Mac OS X. It's... www.clamxav.com.
That's the one I was thinking of. It gets very good reviews.
Sophos is actually advertising a, just from my Google or from my favorite search engine results, it's Sophos Antivirus for Mac Home Edition, now supporting Lion and free.
Oh, I'll try that. I sure appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for the call. Good luck with that. And we have another caller waiting for us. This is a listener in Urbana, line one. Hi. Line one? Hi.
Hi. Is that me?
That's you.
Oh, good. Okay. on two of my computers, I have a problem with Internet Explorer. And what it is when I type something into a search engine, I don't get any letters. I get numbers. Number lock doesn't help. I haven't been able to find a way to make it stop.
But it doesn't happen in other browsers, or it does?
Well, here's the deal. This is really weird. On the one of my computers, Firefox is fine. But on the other one, it's also goofed up.
And this is, so when you type it into the search bar, it actually, you type in ABCD and it comes out numbers.
Exactly.
I don't know. I don't even know where to start on this.
Does Windows have a keyboard mapping?
Does it happen in any other programs? Let's go with that. So if you open up Notepad or Word and you type, what happens?
No problem.
Same problem or no problem?
No problem.
No problem.
It only happens on the Internet. And I think it has to do with a pre-installed Google Chrome that I can't get rid of.
Well, the Chrome browser shouldn't affect Firefox or nor Internet Explorer, but there could be the Google toolbar, browser toolbar could be installed. If you want to give that a go, you could go into your, wherever's in the browser, in the browser add-on section and, into the extensions looking through your list of extensions that you have installed or add-ons that are installed in your browser, I think they may be called browser helpers and toolbar kind of stuff in Internet Explorer, and remove any of them that you don't think you need, because if it turns out you do need them, you can most assuredly go search for them on the internet and install them again, the newest version. So you might want to write it down as you remove them. And
okay.
So, you know, if you suspect the Google, something from Google is causing a problem, then I would definitely look for the Google toolbar and remove those and see what happens. But yeah, I think I would start by, and off the top of my head, I don't know how to turn it on, but there is a way for some browsers to boot them up in what they call safe mode, which
okay.
disables all of the add-ons and basically all the third-party bits and pieces that go together to do, you know, the plugins and things, and see if you still have the problem when the browser's in safe mode.
That's a really good idea.
And off the top of my head, I'm not going to be able to tell you how to put one in safe mode. I am sure that if you just go to a search engine like I'm doing right now and see how to put it in safe mode, and sure enough, I found something on supportmozilla.org that's how to put Firefox in safe mode, how to start Firefox in safe mode.
So, okay.
So I also did a quick Google, and beyond Jim's suggestions, it looks like there's at least one Trojan or other virus type thing that'll cause this. There's people with that if they hold down the function key, the numbers work correctly or the letters work correctly. And there's a combination of pressing function and numlock that sometimes gets something stuck with numlock down, that when you press the numlock key, it doesn't come undone, that you've got to do a combination of function plus numlock to unstick it. So it looks like there might be a couple other things to research as well.
So maybe make sure your antivirus is up to date and your your malware scanner. And do a deep full scan.
Gotcha. Okay, very good. I will do those things.
Okay.
And thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Good luck. This is Focus, and this morning we're talking about computers. It's a show we call Computers in You. It's a topic we take up once a month on the first Thursday of the month in the 11 o'clock hour here on Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn. Debbie Flieger and Jim Irick of the University of Illinois are with us this morning. Listeners, you can join us with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL 800-222-WILL. We also invite you to join us by email. Our email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. So no one waiting at the moment, so I thought maybe we would talk a little bit about these new operating systems that are out there on the horizon. And Debbie, Mountain Lion is to be released to the public this summer, and it's now out there for developers, as I understand it. So what's new, and are you looking forward to this?
Well, what's new is, I'd say, it looks like they've worked very hard on incorporating some of the most popular aspects of the iPad and the iPhone further into the macOS system. So for your average business person using it, probably not that interesting for a lot of things. For your at home user or the personal use, there's a lot of neat stuff. They've updated iChat to messages, so that'll work. It'll talk to your iPad and your iPhone. One of the things they did there was where you can do text messages, you can also do iPad to iPhone messages without going through the SMS service, and now you'll be able to do those straight to your computer. Mm-hmm. You can already download a beta of that. That's available to the general public already. There's an integrated reminder system, kind of a to-do list, checklist, pulling that more out of iCal into the Finder as its standalone app. If it works like the reminders on my phone, it'll talk to my Exchange calendar and other places. Let me keep those in sync. At least that's what the website shows. There are a lot of little things like that that people are used to or starting to use out of iOS 5 on their phones and their iPads. One of the ones I'm interested in is they're adding a notes app. And I've got plenty of things to take notes in on the computer, but if I've got my iPad with me and I'm jotting this stuff down in a meeting or something, it's in notes, and then on my computer it shows up just as a file in my email. And I have to cut and paste it and move it around and stuff like that. I believe with iCloud it'll just sync directly into the notes app and be there in a more full-featured way. So I think it looks interesting, but it doesn't look earth-shattering for me, so we'll have to see.
Yeah. It sounds like, and this is something that I read, that Apple is taking care of people with other Apple devices here, and from what you just said, that sounds like that is coming through loud and clear.
Yes.
Yeah. So it hasn't been all that long since Lion was released, right?
Last July.
Yeah.
So about once a year.
Once a year? Okay. So I just updated not all that long ago to Lion, so, I guess I'll just wait and see here for a little while, huh?
That's always a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when things come out, they're really clean and very easy to use, and the changes aren't very big, and you can just jump with them. But often you want to wait a little bit, make sure all the last-minute bugs got shook out, and then go for it.
Yeah, okay.
So when's support going to end for my Snow Leopard running system at home?
That's the one thing I don't know about. I haven't seen a date, because normally they only support two operating systems. And when 10.8 comes out, there'll be 10.7, and older computers, even older Intel computers, won't be able to run 10.7 or 10.8. And so when 10.6 doesn't work anymore, that becomes a support issue. Because, for example, here at the university, if the OS isn't supported by the vendor and they're not providing security patches, you're not supposed to use it. So people who have older Intel computers won't be able, or PowerPC computers won't be able to use, I guess PowerPC's not been since 10.4, so I think that's unsupported anyway.
Right. But so I should be able to, if I need to, I should be able to upgrade my home Mac Mini to Lion, or Mountain Lion even, right?
Only,
I'll have to pay.
Well, you'll have to pay, but not all Mac Minis are created equal as far as Lion and Mountain Lion are concerned. They're 64-bit operating systems. So if you've got an older Mac Mini that's a Core Duo hardware, is the name of the technology, it's a 32-bit system, and it won't run these new operating systems. If you go to your About This Mac and it says it's a Core 2 Duo or something like that, then yes, you'll be able to run Lion or Mountain Lion on it. So yeah, there's a hardware transition. It's not just do you have a PowerPC or an Intel mm-hmm. anymore. It's do you have a new enough Intel?
Which is somewhere, those were about, 2008, 2009? Around there, I think, is when they went from to the Core 2 Duos.
Maybe even a little earlier than that.
Okay. So probably for people with laptops, if you're running a fairly recent one, even 3 or 4 years old, you're probably, or 3 years old.
3 years old will do it for sure.
Right.
I know I've got a three to 4 year old computer, and I know it's running Lion with no problem.
Okay. So you really need to update every so often, maybe every 2 years at the minimum, to a new operating system.
That's a good idea. I actually had a family member just got caught. Their hard drive died, and they had a 10.2 Macintosh, and they went to 10.7. They had backups of most of their stuff. They only lost a little bit. But what happened is even the stuff they had backups of, things like the address book file, there's been so many format changes between 10.2 and 10.7 that the address book in 10.7 couldn't read it.
Yeah.
So you really don't want to get too far behind. And I think, I don't know how true, if that's as true for Windows as it is for Mac, but I wouldn't suggest being more than 3 or 4 versions back. At this point, if you're earlier than 10.5, you're going to have trouble moving up. I think it's safe to say 10.6 is probably better.
I haven't done a lot of updates on Windows. I'm usually a pretty big fan of starting from scratch on clean installs, back up what data you need, and so you don't bring any cruft with you. But I did do one recently, and I think I actually had to upgrade it from XP to Vista to Windows 7 all in one go. I don't think it let me go from XP to 7 because of some problem I had. I'm not positive. It was a difficult upgrade. Mm. I would have been better off if I had just taken the time and migrated to a new machine. And Windows, and Mac has this too, and certainly I know Windows has it where it's their upgrade, basically to go from an old machine to, instead of doing an in-place upgrade, if you just buy a new machine, they can do a thing where it creates a file that says, okay, here's all your settings so that mostly the new machine will look like your old one.
But it's got to be a new enough machine. For the Mac case, yeah. That technology started around OS 10.5.
Okay.
So and these folks that had 10.2 were just out of luck.
Windows, Microsoft did backdate some utilities and said, okay, we're now introducing this, and I think it was introduced with Vista, but they said, we're going to make an XP so you can go download it, and it'll run on XP. So that was kind of cool.
Okay. We've got a couple of callers.
All right.
Before I take the next call, though, I got to ask, CRUF, is that like a combination of CRUD and stuff?
I suppose.
CRUF?
Sure.
I've learned a new word today. That's great. Okay, let's go to the phone and take a call. This is a listener in Champaign County. Hi.
Hi. Sophos, I guess the spelling right, but I don't know if it's entirely free. It looks like it's a try now for free business,
no.
But maybe that's something else. Endpoint Protection 10. That's something else, maybe.
That's not what you're looking for.
Okay. All right. Well, I think I already went, but they're pitching it. Obviously, that's what they do. They give something away free. They want to pitch something else, I guess.
Search for, yeah, Endpoint is more of their commercial product the last time I looked into it.
Yeah, I already downloaded it. And
okay, so the one that I was looking at is called Sophos Antivirus for Mac Home Edition.
Right, got it. Haven't installed it yet, but about to. That was one sort of question. But the other one was the business about Google. Safari on Mac has a private browsing mode where it... How would that work? Interact with the if I only rebooted and searched with Google on Safari in private mode? Would that mean I'd be escaping their a bit of their dossier on me?
I would believe the answer to that is no.
Oh.
I believe that the private mode surfing has to do with what's being saved to your local machine, not what
they have on.
What they hate, but there are some, I suppose, because some of the way they track you is through tracking cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And so privacy mode in a browser, and I don't use privacy mode, and I haven't spent a lot of time researching it, but I would suspect that privacy mode does restrict on cookies or whether they can be used at all, or certainly highly restricts how they can be used. So there's some possibility there that that'll help with from the Google everything, you know, their policy change that everybody's talking about that happened today. So some, but I think you want to, off the top of my head, I just can't answer very well.
Well, it seems like it would restrict some information, like you say, the tracking cookies. So, but they would still know what your Mac number is, not Mac.
Your IP address.
Yeah, they would know all that.
Browser, what version of the browser, and things, and yeah, certainly. I haven't researched on all the things how Google keeps track of who you are. Quite frankly, I actually log into my Google browser and tell it who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I just used it yesterday. I had searched for something at home on my tablet PC. It was actually a recipe. And when I got home that night, I was like, I hadn't saved it or anything. I was like, oh, that's what I want to get. I wrote down the ingredients, went to the grocery store, bought the stuff, came home, and I was like, oh, I can't find that recipe again. Mm-hmm. So I actually went to Google and I said, show me my search history. And I found... I found the query I had used that morning to find the recipe, ran it again, and found the recipe again. So I was happy that Google remembered my search history across multiple machines.
Yeah, well, I hope it was good. But I understand the point you're making. But on the other hand, I have the concerns that have caused, 28 attorney generals in the European Union to say, we don't like this particularly. So thanks.
Thanks for the call this morning. And maybe we can come back a little bit later in the show and talk about how to do some of these things, if that's of a concern to you. The privacy controversies are raging not only about Google, but about some other apps and I believe Apple as well. So let's take another call. This is a listener in Urbana, line 2. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling because I have multiple problems, and I'll go till you run out of time and need to talk to somebody else. The first problem I'll mention is that I have an Apple Mac bought in 2007. It's an all-in-one, if that means anything. And what has happened with Apple Mail is that I have downloaded up to 8 copies of the same email, and I now have in my inbox 34,440 unopened files. I don't know why it did that. I don't know of anything different that I did. It just started downloading multiple copies.
Any ideas, Debbie?
Well, usually when you download multiple copies like that, it's because the mail server at the other end isn't storing the setting that says you've downloaded this or marking it as previously downloaded, or the Apple Mail is not keeping track that it's already downloaded it. Normally, it's a combination of those two things that tell mail whether or not to pull it back down another time. So I would say mail's very confused. at 34,000 pieces of unopened mail. The other thing that comes to mind, if that's your inbox, even if you divide that by 8, if you have 8 copies of every piece of mail, that's way too much stuff to have in your inbox. That confuses a lot of programs. You need to file it out of your inbox. You might be able to tell Apple Mail to rebuild the mailbox and have it find out that it sorts through and cleans things up and figures it out, but I certainly wouldn't count on it. Any thoughts, Jim?
So what would you do? I don't understand.
Well, rebuild is a menu item, so if you're selected your inbox so that you're seeing those 34,000 messages, let me pull up mail so I make sure I tell you which the right menu it's under. And under the mailbox menu is a command called rebuild.
Do we know which protocol you're using to download your mail from the mail server?
Is it POP or IMAP?
I don't understand
the word protocol.
So there's basically two really popular ways of getting... So your mail is stored on a mail server. Somebody hosts that for you. So your mail app on your computer is configured to go talk to that and download the mail. So the mail is actually delivered to some server connected to the Internet. And then
AT&T.
Oh, that could be it. And you have to talk to that. There is an established language to talk to that mail server. That's the protocol. And there are two popular ones. One's called POP, Post Office Protocol. One's called IMAP, IMAP, which I can't tell you off the top of my head what it stands for. And I have definitely seen this problem with POP. POP is an older protocol. In general, the world, in my opinion, the world of mail administrators, mail server administrators are trying to get users to stop using it and to move to IMAP, which I recommend. I haven't used POP in years now. POP has a problem where it downloads your mail and then it has to actually tell the server that it downloaded it so that the server deletes it or marks it for deletion on the server. And if that part, either you can actually tell your client to not tell it to delete it, or for some reason the connection is interrupted and it that fails, the part where it says, yes, you can delete this, I have a copy of it. Then if that fails somehow, the next time you go to download your mail, the mail server, the internet-connected mail server, will actually present you with all that mail again. And so I would definitely suggest moving, if you are using the POP protocol, which maybe Debbie can tell us how to configure or find out whether the mail application is running, which protocol is being used, to then contact your mail provider, which may be AT&T, and they'll have instructions on how to configure to use IMAP instead of POP.
I probably am using both with the university email.
You would only use one or the other per server. You have to pick.
They both feed into Apple Mail.
And you could have, yeah, so you need, what all you need to care about at this point is the one that's duplicating. Is both your university mail and your personal mail duplicating, or just one?
I think just the AT&T.
Okay. So you may be using IMAP for the university mail and POP for the AT&T mail, but you won't need to adjust anything with the university mail. You just worry about your AT&T account. So to figure out which one you're using, under the mail menu at the top of when the program's running, there's a choice called Preferences. And then you get a list of things across the top of the window that shows up. And if you click on Accounts, it actually shows you a list of the different accounts that are configured in the box.
Okay. Do I get in touch with anybody, or do I do something myself?
Well, it'll actually tell you right there in the list of accounts whether that you're using IMAP or POP. And so if it says that your AT&T account is using POP, then what you want to do is go to AT&T's website and either use their customer service links to find somebody to talk to, or depending on your comfortability level with doing things based on web pages, read through their web pages how to convert from POP to IMAP. Now, to deal with the 34,000 pieces of mail that you already have pulled down to your local computer, especially if it's POP, nothing is going to fix that but you deleting the extra ones. Because the computer doesn't understand which ones you want and which ones you don't want. So if you've got 8 copies of everything, that does start to get very time-consuming. It might actually
fill up my hard drive.
Well, that, yeah.
And I don't know that 8 is the limit. I'm just saying that I saw 8.
Okay. But for example, if I click on one of my accounts that's no longer running but that had previously used Pop, one of the things I've got is an advanced tab, and it's got a checkbox for remove copy from server after retrieving the message. And I can say, do I want to remove it immediately, after one day, after 1 week, or after 1 month, or if I move it out of my inbox and file it somewhere else as if because I've read it. I would immediately go find your account, and if you've got that option, go ahead and set that. Otherwise, you're going to keep pulling the same stuff down over and over again every time it checks mail. So there's a if it's Pop, there's a copy on the server and a copy on your computer. And it's just pulling it down again every single time it checks mail. That sounds like what you need to get stopped.
Okay. May I move to another question?
Well, we have to take a break, and I've got a couple of other callers. So if you wouldn't mind, we'll take the break, we'll take the other callers, and then maybe this listener could call back, try calling back a little bit later in the hour, and we'll try and help out with whatever else is at issue there. So let's take a break. This is Focus. We'll be back in a moment.
Media suppression, corruption, and the murder of critics have marked the regime of Vladimir Putin, who's running for his third term as president in Russia's election next week. Despite mass demonstrations, he's expected to win. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Russian journalist Masha Gessen, author of The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Seaboat in Champaign, with a Southern-style menu that features catfish, chicken, shrimp, sandwiches, dinners, and more, available for carryout, delivery, and catering. The Seaboat, on West Kirby, across from County Market. Delivery and catering services available at 351-6200.
And this is Focus from Illinois Public Media. I'm Celeste Quinn. We're talking about computers today with Debbie Flieger and Jim Irick of the University of Illinois. And during the break there, we had a thought that since that last caller is affiliated with the university, it might behoove him to make an appointment with Sites, right?
And they can only say no, right?
Yeah, right.
They may say yes.
Yeah. So that might help, especially if there are a number of things, at issue there. So let's take another call. This is a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I recently replaced an XP machine with a Windows 7 notebook, and it was relatively painless. Two XP machines had been connected on a network, home network, and communicated flawlessly. It's a little bit more complicated with the 7. You do have to not only mark files as shared, but you've got to go in and tell the machine which users can use the share. But that done, it seems to work very well. The one problem I still have is a laser printer, 3600N, which Windows 7 recognizes that it's there, and in fact it allows me to send a print job to it, but it never prints. I've tried changing drivers, or actually both trying to change them and reinstalling the dedicated driver. It's recommended that you use a universal driver, that works better.
So which brand? There are the two major laser printer companies both make 3600Ns. Which one do you have?
Oh, this is an HP.
Oh. Yeah, there's some issues with that. That's a 3600N color laser?
That's right.
And I'm afraid I'm not going to have a good answer for you, because one of the companies I consult for, instead of spending more time troubleshooting problems with the drivers on 3600s on Windows 7s and Server 2008, we replaced all six of them with a newer printer. I looked, and there are definitely some websites out there, some forums that are going to have some tips for you. I went down the same route. I tried to use the PCL5 universal print driver from HP. And it actually crash the print spooler on the server I was working on. I was not happy about that.
No.
So I ran into some issues, and, you know, as far as I can tell, I was really unhappy. Now, these are fairly old printers. I mean, at least the ones that we had, those 3600s are, I'm thinking 5 or 6. Is that right?
They probably were introduced at least 5 or 6 years ago. I bought mine as a reconditioned printer probably 3 years ago.
Okay. The only help I would have would be to go to the forums and see. Go to HP and see if they have any, if there's new firmware. Because actually, this is not something even I think of very much, and I doubt if any home people hardly ever do this, is that you can actually upgrade some printers can actually have their operating system, their firmware upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
That may make them more compatible and work better with drivers. But in general, I felt that this was a driver problem with the quality and how the driver worked from HP on Windows 7 in 2008, which they did. Microsoft really changed the way drivers worked when they got away from the upgrades past Vista and Server 2003, so Server 2008 and Windows 7. And I felt that it was a driver incompatibility issue that we were not going to resolve.
Well, from my experience, I think you may be right. Apparently, some people have managed to resolve it, but who knows what the conditions were. I guess I do have a workaround. As long as I keep the XP machine running XP, it would be easier in a lot of ways to upgrade it. But
once you upgrade that to Windows 7, you're going to run into the same
issue.
That's
exactly it. That's
right.
Why I'm almost locked into maybe even going to dual boot in order to print. I can access a file from either machine because I have a network drive.
Sure. I would try. One thing to try, if we're talking about just so you can print, is maybe try to connect. I don't know. Are you connecting USB or over the network?
Over the network, and then it has a USB 3 drive connection.
Okay.
So it goes to the Windows 7 computer over the network, and then it hooks to the actual drive with a USB 3.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could try to plug in your new laptop with USB straight into that printer because it does have a USB 2.0 standard plug on the back of it. And so install the driver from HP, and I would download their big driver, their full, I forget what, it's not the business line, it's There's a set of printers they have that is full install. It's, you know, it helps you through it instead of expecting you to know how to add a driver in Windows. It does it all for you.
Okay.
And then once that's installed, plug and tell it it's going to be local. And during the instructions, it may actually say, okay, plug the printer in now. Plug it in over USB and see if you can just get it to print. That'll at least be able to so you can print.
I have tried that, but I can try it again with different drivers. It also seems to have a network jack.
The 3600N?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It has a JetDirect, an HP JetDirect card that you can assign an IP address to, and you can print to it over the network. That is actually what I was having problems with when I was working with it at the other client, was they don't connect to printers with USB or parallel. It's only over the network, and I couldn't get that to work. Now, what's interesting is I went to 3600N drivers on HP's website, and they don't even list Windows 7 as a supported operating system.
No.
So, but you could try the Windows 2008. They list 32-bit and 64-bit, whichever one matches the operating system you have on your laptop. You could give that a go and see what happens, but I wouldn't hold out hope.
Okay, I tried a Vista driver, which didn't work, but I haven't tried the, it's Windows of...
Server 2008.
2008, yeah.
I would try those drivers.
Okay, that's something I haven't tried. Otherwise, I guess I have to use the rather awkward printing from the XP machine, which actually isn't that bad.
And then the next time you need a new toner cartridge, think about maybe going up, replacing it with the new printer. You'd actually be surprised of how inexpensive color laser printers are now,
and perhaps a bit better color quality.
That I can't attest to.
Well, probably for the same amount of money it would be.
But I know that they're really a lot more affordable than when I was looking at them during the generation that these 3600s are.
I think the 3600 originally was around $600, and I got a good buy for about under $200. But I guess compared to a inkjet, I've gotten my money out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the help. It sounds like Windows is a little bit less painful to go from one version to the next than Apple. I didn't think it was that bad connecting the two. Anyway, thanks so much.
Thanks for the call. And next we go to a listener in Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Good morning again. I went through and checked these things, and I did the updates and got no joy. In fact, it got a little bit worse. This is showing the videos in Wall Street Journal versus Google News. And before I was getting at least the Windows coming, the display coming up showing the start button and a time bar, completion bar, but I did the updates and those disappeared. And what's been happening is that I'd press the start button and it'd go immediately to the pause button. And then I lost that. Now, if it makes any difference, I'm using 64-bit Windows 7 Professional Edition. Could that have anything to do with it?
I don't think so. I run that on all my machines, on my physical desktops. But I don't run, in general, 64-bit versions of the browsers. Do you know? You'd have to download that special, so you're probably running the 32-bit versions also. The only thing I can think of right now is then to check your proxy settings to make sure that the browser has no proxy settings set, or at least none that it shouldn't have set.
I don't believe it does.
And then, how is your internet connection? As far as when you download something, is it...
It's Comcast.
That works for me at my house, so... wireless or wired to your router?
Oh, we're using a wireless router.
So going straight from play to pause, I mean, the only thing that pops into my head is that maybe it's buffering, having buffering problems, and it's actually immediately stopping because it can't download the stream fast enough to display it to you. But if you can, I mean, is your internet, when you surf anything else or watch the videos and other stuff, it works fine, right?
Absolutely.
Right. So that kind of points away from a streaming problem. Do you have any other, you have Firefox and Internet Explorer, right?
Both, yes.
Have you tried, so I'm not suggesting that you switch browsers. I'm suggesting that for testing purposes that you try a different browser. So perhaps downloading Chrome, or if you have a, if you're adverse to Google, Opera, I think, or Safari, if you're okay with Apple stuff. And doing the updates for browser add-ons inside of those and seeing how it works in those.
Okay.
Just to figure, I mean, I don't know, I'm grasping here.
Okay, this isn't a real big thing for me anyway. It's just a minor annoyance.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you.
Okay. And next we talk with a listener in Edgar County, line 2. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
I heard that, did I hear right, that they're going to start making CPUs and just start making only laptops and notepads and notebooks and stuff like that?
I hope not. I haven't heard that, and I certainly hope not, because I like my desktop. I like being able to pop off a panel and swap parts easy, and laptops are a lot harder to work on. So,
yeah, we've been through a lot more. I've been through laptop after laptop, and CPUs just seem to hang in there.
Yeah, full desktop towers, because you don't move them around. They tend to have better airflow. They last longer. Not that, like I said, not in general because they're made of better components, but just because they don't get roughed up as much and they have better, I think a big one is they have more space to keep cool. And heat is definitely the enemy of computer components. So, no, I hope not, because I like my desktop.
Well, possibly. Has HP decided not to make any more CPUs?
It's quite possible that a specific vendor has decided to get out of a certain form factor business, but I haven't seen that in the news, or if I did, I just went, eh, it's that, you know, it's vendor X. I don't buy from them anyway, so I didn't pay attention.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I was just curious.
Okay, thanks for the call. Some good news there. And we're coming down on the on time here this morning, and I thought, well, we should definitely talk about Windows 8, which is coming down the line. In fact, a beta version has been released to the public.
A preview version?
Yeah, preview version. Right. Consumer preview, as they're calling it. And apparently it's quite different than Windows 7.
It is. I have not downloaded it or played with it at all. I have read some of the articles. I think that it goes along that Microsoft is doing some of the same things that Apple's doing with Mountain Lion. They're taking things from the mobile market, the tablet, the touchscreen market, and moving it onto this line of the operating system. I'm an old computer user, and I'm not sure I like it. Somebody was making fun of me about this when we were talking about this morning before we came over here. I like desktop. I like my keyboard. I like my mouse. If you have a tablet, the things they're adding, I think they're awesome. But some of the stuff, I'm like, one of the things that I thought of is that they're adding these graphical interfaces that are meant for an inaccurate finger or thumb to use on a screen. Well, I use a very precise mouse with a small little pointer. Mm-hmm. I don't need the icons to be big. And for 14 icons to fill up the whole screen and then have to scroll through screen after screen after screen. So for me, I'm kind of happy with Windows 7. We'll see where they go with it. I don't know. I think that at least for business stuff, I'm going to be skipping Windows 8, and we'll see what happens with the next one.
Okay. You know, it seems to me that if you don't have to be Rip Van Winkle these days to fall behind. You can go out and have a nap, you know, in the afternoon, a little nap, and wake up, and the world has changed.
Well, I think I've only been running Windows 7 for maybe a year. When I got my last new machine, and already we're talking about these things, and they're drastically changing the GUI. So,
okay, and I've got an email that's come in, and it's rather lengthy, and it's someone you know, Debbie, Jim Limber, ring a bell? Anyway, speaking of times, this goes back to 1999 and the fear of Y2K. And it's a rather lengthy email message. I won't read all of it. But he says, one lesson learned was that sometimes history has value in bridging the present to the future. Apparently, he was someone that needed some assistance readying his unit for the big change or the big Y2K switchover, which turned out not to be too much of a problem. And anyway, he says, belated thanks to Debbie and the other participants in Urbana for what is likely a unique event in the rich history of the university related to networks and computing. So,
thank you.
Okay, very good. And I don't know, is there any, we've got a caller who's called back, and I don't want to take the call, I'm afraid, because we're coming down here on the last minute. We only have a minute or two left, and I don't want to get in and then have to cut everybody off. So anything else that you want to mention before we leave? We did have some other things that we talked about.
More people need to stop running Windows XP and move up to newer operating systems with better fixes on them. At least we didn't hear it from anybody today that talked about Windows 95, Windows 98, or Windows 2000, or Millennium Edition. I'm happy to have that. But and I say this every time, and then I forget to go spend the time to research it. We are getting to the point eventually where Microsoft will stop fixing Windows XP security problems. I believe they still are, but they're not fixing anything else as far as I know. So if it's time. Windows 7 is good, folks. If you're a Windows person, it's okay to upgrade, and I would not wait on Windows 8.
Yeah, and the same goes for Apple, right, Debbie?
Yes.
Keep up to date.
Keep up to date when you can.
All right. Best you can. And we will leave it there for this edition of Focus Computers in You. Debbie Flieger and Jim Irick have been with us this morning. They're with the University of Illinois. Debbie is a network engineer for Campus Information Technologies and Education Services, or SITES, here at the university. And Jim Irick is a wireless network designer and security engineer for the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the U of I. Computers in You, a show we do once a month on the first Thursday of the month, coming in April. We will do the show again on the first Thursday of the month. And Debbie and Jim will be back with us in May. Very good. This is Focus.